Hi guys, welcome back to Breaking Bread. This is a Daily Pennsylvanian podcast about diversity, equity, inclusion. Today we are recording with Socrates Okongo. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay. And our food for the day is halal cart. I got chicken over rice. And what did you get?
I got chicken, shrimp, and rice.
Nice. And what did you get, Doer?
I got some lamb falafel over rice.
Awesome. So today we're doing something a little bit different. Usually I'm your only host, but today we have Doer in today. Doer, do you want to introduce yourself as a co-host?
Sure. Hey, y'all. I'm Doer. I'm a freshman in the Huntsman program. I'm studying international studies and business with Russian as my target language, and I'm from Phoenix, Arizona.
Awesome. Okay, so today we have Socrates. Socrates is a first year in the Huntsman program in international studies and business here at Penn from Kenya. At the age of 19, he's an orator in both English and French with passions for youth empowerment, education, and self-development, and with an active social media presence where he posts about his experiences at Penn, reflections, and words of wisdom for the world. Today, we're going to talk about his experience at Penn as an international student from Kenya in the world of international business and leadership. So let's get right into it.
Hi, Socrates. Thanks for coming on. Let's start with some introductions. Your name, year, major, hometown, pronouns, or any other relevant parts of your identity.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. My name is Socrates Okongo. I am from Kenya, Nairobi to be specific. I'm representing the East African section of Africa, and I'm really excited to be here. My pronouns are he, him, and I am one of the 44 scholars in the Huntsman program doing my dual degree in international studies and business with French as my target language. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Awesome. So can you tell us about your journey to coming to Penn? Because I know you've had a really interesting journey with being in Kenya and then graduating to study French, the Huntsman program, and all of that. So could you walk us through that?
Wow, wonderful. It's going to be really exciting, Jani, and Odyssey, I must say. So I finished school 2 years ago in the year 2022. That's when I graduated from high school. And the thing in Kenya is that the top minds or the best minds that Kenya has to offer either go into medicine, engineering, law, or architecture. I call them the phenomenal four. And anything beyond those four courses are considered as, can I say, not serious courses, right? If you do anything beyond architecture, law, engineering, or medicine, you're not doing a serious course. So unfortunately, I'm trying to be a little bit modest, but given that I'm one of the best men that Kenya has to offer, I found myself going to med school. And I spent some time there, some stint there of 3 months in med school. But while I was there, I realized that this was not it for me, because throughout my entire high school experience, I had this passion and zeal for biology, to become a doctor, because the culture inculcates in you certain mannerisms that push you towards that path. It says that, oh, you're the best in the class, you'll make a phenomenal doctor, and that kind of stuff. And when I realized that this was not it for me, something that defined my existence, because it has always been my dream to become a doctor, was no longer the viable option for me, because I'm not the kind of person to lock myself up in a room studying anatomy. I mean, I'm the kind of person who wants to become an orator in both English and French, right? So I dropped out. And the thing is, when something gives you so much purpose, is immediately withdrawn from you, nothing is left. So I had an existential crisis where I was wondering, asking myself, so what do I do with myself right now? Because this is something that gave me so much purpose, but it no longer has much functionality within me. And that's when I decided to take up French classes at Alliance Française de Nairobi. And the same level of enthusiasm and vigor that I employed towards my dedication towards medicine is the same. I translated it into French. So I was that crazy guy who will study French for 16 hours a day. It was that crazy, 16 hours a day studying French, because it was something that really gave me a lot of purpose and resonated deeply within me. And true to the word, I put in the effort and the rewards I got. Funny enough, at that point in time, I made a vow to myself that I'm not going to study in Kenya. Not that there's anything wrong about the educational curriculum or systems in Kenya, it's just that it's not what I wanted for myself. I wanted a liberal education that would, can I say, foster my proclivities, encourage me to have a liberal mind and put me on such a path. And that's when I learned of the Huntsman program. One thing led to another. Then I learned that the Huntsman program demands of me to be fluent in a foreign language, but at that time I was at beginner level French. But the thing is, for you to get from the level I was to the intermediate level that Huntsman required is like a 3-4 year journey. I had to compress all that in 8 months. To cover from A1 all the way till B2, which is C1, advanced levels in French, in 8 months. That was March. That by November, when I submit my Common App application, I already have certificates that justify that I'm at advanced level in French, or else I wouldn't get into the Huntsman program. So for me, it was a do or die kind of mission. But a phenomenal concept that I encountered along the way was a concept by Robert Greene called Death Ground Strategy, where you eliminate all your possibilities. You don't have plan, you only have plan A, there's no B or C. Yeah. So you dedicate, you literally put all your baskets in one, all your eggs in one basket, then you watch the basket, right? And I did exactly that. I forfeited all opportunities whatsoever to study in Kenya, because for me that was not a path that I wanted for myself. And I went full throttle, head first, into applying for the Huntsman program. And voila, here we are.
Speaking about putting all your eggs in one basket, you told me before that Huntsman was the only U.S. program that you applied to. What drew you specifically to the Huntsman program and studying international studies and business here at Penn?
Beautiful. So I spent 8 months honing, cultivating, and curating my application to be a Huntsman fit, to ensure that I had eliminated all possibilities of failure. Literally, all the possibilities of failure, I'd long eliminated them to ensure that I increased my odds to be in the program. Why? While I was interacting with the portal, the Huntsman program, it was very alluring to me. And not in a point of pedigree or prestige, but from a perspective of what the program does to the scholar, the kind of scholar it calculates and it enhances. So, the international studies perspective, coupled with business and French, proves to be very sacrosanct, because I have the vision of becoming an orator in both English and French, right? Why is that so? What I noticed is that, so in the African continent, so there is an ion, I call it the language ion curtain that divides the Francophone part of Africa and the Anglophone part of Africa. So Francophone, we have West Africa, Central, a bit of it, then Anglophone, we have North, South, and Eastern Africa. But they have, there's that, can I say, the division that exists because of language barrier. And most of the French orators, right, in the continent, are not that phenomenal in English because of the nasal influence that comes with being a native French speaker. And most of the English, the orators in English, are not. They barely know a word in French. And so I asked myself, I love public speaking. Could I do the same thing in French? And what I do is that I seek to reconcile the opposites, being an orator as eloquent in English as I am in French. And I realize that the Huntsman program does and will play a sacrosanct role in putting me and positioning me amongst the highest echelons that the public speaking sphere has to offer. So that's what attracted me.
Just to clarify, what is the official language of Kenya?
So the official language of Kenya, so there's the national language and the official language. The official language is English. The national language is Swahili.
Awesome. Socrates, you told me about how, you said earlier how the Huntsman program would have helped you get to the highest levels of public speaking. What drew you to the business side, if anything? And how has your perspective as a Kenyan international student and a French English orator shaped your perspective and approach towards a place like Penn and Wharton?
Well, I myself ask myself the same question. Sometimes, indeed I do, I ask myself the same question. But it took a level of, it demanded of me to have a certain level of introspection to realize how I can make the absolute most of my Wharton education. Because given that the Wharton Business School is indeed the best and the most premier business school in the world at large, and by virtue of being the Huntsman program, I have access to the Wharton resources, I had to ask myself those fundamental questions. And I realized that I, as a public speaker, the constant is that I want to do public speaking for a living. The variable is, what do I want to speak about? Do I want to speak about business? Do I want to speak about international diplomatic issues? Do I want to talk about entrepreneurship? Do I want to talk about youth empowerment? What do I want to talk about? And that is exactly why I'm here. So I see myself at the intersection of public policies and business, where how public policies inform and have a direct impact to the people, and how that translates into the macro and micro economic schemes. That is exactly where I want to be, and that is exactly where I want to have my impact. To be more specific into how it resonates with the young people, how it resonates with the upcoming generations, and how they strategically put themselves for success in the future generations.
Okay, so we chatted before about some culture shock moments you've had at Penn, which I'm sure you've run into a bunch. Could you talk about your unique experiences with the cultures you've encountered at Penn, Wharton, and Huntsman, as an international student from Kenya?
The greatest culture shock I believe I have had. I have had two. So one is a bit comical one. Another one is a much more professional one. So I'm going to start with the comical one. The most comic culture shock I had, or I have had till today, is Greek life. So while I was in Kenya, I used to expose myself to content about the University of Pennsylvania online. And every single content creator who was putting content out there was talking about Greek life. Which club are you in? Greek life. What are you in? Greek life. Greek life. Everybody's Greek life. So I was like, okay, fine. If everybody's in Greek life, then there must be something good about this Greek life. So I got here on campus and somebody asked me, which club you want to join? I said, I want to join Greek life. So I thought that Greek life is a philosophy club where we talk about philosophical issues and we delve into them. Only for me to go to Greek life at 11 p.m. close to midnight to hear music blaring, almost shattering all the windows. And I'm told, voila, Greek life. And I stood there rooted to the ground, like taken aback. Because I thought that Greek life is a philosophy club. On to know that Greek life is just a couple of parties and frats and sororities. And yeah, so that was a severe culture shock for me. And the more professional bit is the obsession with finance. Finance and IB. I personally, till to date, I am in Wharton and I'm trying to fathom what is people's obsession with IB and finance, and I cannot wrap my hand around it. I simply cannot. It's some form of mass hypnosis.
Yeah, I think that's actually a pretty common sentiment that a lot of international students feel. Both of those, including Greek life. But with those culture shocks, I mean, do you find yourself buying into any of it? I mean, do you think that, hey, maybe I would want to join Greek life, even though it's not a philosophy club? Or do you think that some of these culture shocks are just not really for you?
I personally feel that my response won't be a one-size-fits-all, but it's going to be a fusion of the best of both worlds, right? So the beauty of being an international student, as much as it has its own setbacks, is that I get to experience the contemporary American setup while not being in the American setup itself. So I am the outside looking in, right? I see the entire landscape from a detached perspective, yet I get the honor of experiencing it myself. And that is not a reality that is afforded domestic students, because they've been in the environment for so long to the point that everything seems normal, right? Some of the things that I see here are not normal, right? But domestic students have been so much habituated to it, the point that it's now the new reality. I'm going to start off with Greek life, right? Do I see myself joining a frat? Would I want to join a frat? Because those are two different questions. Would I want to join a frat? Yes, I would. Why? Because of, like I said, the fraternity, the chance to interact with people with diverse perspectives, interact with them from brotherhoods, connections, that can take you above and beyond the spheres of this university. Because after all, Penn is the people. That's it. Penn is the people. The greatest resource that the University of Pennsylvania has is the brains working on locust walk. Anything else that they teach in the class, you can get it on YouTube. I wish I was joking. I wish I was joking, right? Most of the concepts that we encounter, it's not very unique and specific. They're universal concepts, but only packaged in a different way. It's just the same thing, but rebranded and put with the Penn sticker. It's like, and given a little bit of, can I say, context, depth, and a level of profundity. But fundamentally, it's the same concepts. Opportunity cost is the same at University of Pennsylvania, the same at Temple University, the same at University of Michigan, the same as, it's still opportunity cost. The definition is the same. Mm-hmm. The only difference is maybe the professor, maybe one might have much more nuanced understanding of it, and your classmates. It still goes back to the people, not the content. So Penn is the people. And having a chance to interact with the people through the fraternities for meaningful connections with them goes a long way and might and will take me leaps and bounds. So that is why I would want to join them. Will I join a frat? Now that's a different question. Most likely no, because of the time commitment that a frat demands of you when you're rushing and all that kind of stuff. I'm not really willing to make that compromise because it will mean that I'm going to be putting my academics on the line, and I have interests that I wish to pursue beyond the confines of the classroom. I'm a member of a TEDx PEN, so that's public speaking once again. Content creation is a really time-intensive activity, that I must be always wary of. And rushing will mean that I compromise other aspects that are fundamental to me, and the opportunity cost is just too high, and I'm not willing to bear.
Socrates, something that this makes me think of is when you were talking earlier about in Kenya, how there's like four professions that a lot of like bright minds go into, and how you decide to break free of that and come to Penn to pursue like your dreams of being an orator in both English and French. And I just wanted to like connect this back to like what we were talking about, like culture shock moments, and how like as someone who is an outsider looking in, how like your perspective differs on like still charting your own path in like a society where people kind of where people do feel pressured to go down like a certain path with like frats or like down finance or down certain professions.
So it's just the same thing. It's the same narrative replicating itself in a different tale. It's just the same thing. In Kenya, people are being, drummed down into the path of medicine, law, architecture, engineering, and sometimes comsci. Here, it's just virtually the same thing. Wharton, people are drumming IB, finance into your ear. It's just different career paths, but fundamentally, it's the same thing happening to young people.
Has looking in helped shape your perspective on on your perception on the expectations that society puts on young people?
In some sense, yes. Because personally, where I am at, there's always that repetitive thought is, how do you create a career for yourself in public speaking? Because not many people who go down this path. And the thought forever begs my mind, how do I chart my own path here on campus with my very unique and specific interests? And there's always the bandwagon effect that is always lucrative and alluring, that this is the path that everyone else is going. Why not go down a similar path? Because it's well-trodden. And similarly, if you want to go camping in the woods, let me give you guys a metaphor, an anecdote. If you guys want to go camping in the woods, first off, you're going to join the main highway. While joining the main highway, you're going to join a feeder road, like an access road, right? From the access road, you're going to a feeder road. From a feeder road, a trek. From a trek to a path to maybe the cabin where you're resorting. But you must start at the main highway, where the well-trodden path that's well-defined. But along the way, you know exactly where you want to go. I know that I want to become the top 10 public speakers, orators in the continent and also on a global stage. But I acknowledge that it's not a well-trodden path. So I must be willing to take advantage of the resources that Wharton has to offer, be it through finance, consulting, IB, you name it, to secure myself not only financially, but also from a point of resource and network. Then from then on, deep in my heart, I know exactly where I want to go. And that's when I chart a path for myself to go into my said cabin or my said woods.
Okay, so switching gears a little bit, can you tell us about your social media presence? What inspired you to start with it, and what has the journey with that looked like?
So my social media presence. On the platforms in which I am very present will be Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. That's where I showcase most of my content. And my content, to be very specific, is ideas. That's what I do. I'm all about ideas. If there's anything, if you can just summarize Socrates in one word, it's just ideas. I'm all about ideas. I fancy ideas. I'm in love with ideas. Because ideas have this, potent ability to change lives, shift perspectives, and redefine paradigms. And it started off with my Instagram page, where I used to have an introspective perspective, where I will showcase concepts that have piqued my interest in the course of the week, and I will talk about them because I fancy how we can model and play around with ideas and how various concepts have significant importance in our lives if applied and if they resonate with us. Why do I do that? I personally stand by one mantra, that your age is an asset, never a liability. So why do I create content? Because I truly believe that now more than ever, young people ought to realize that the world is their oyster. And it is upon them, it is incumbent upon them to seize the opportunities that they have and leverage them to their advantage. That indeed their age is their greatest asset, never their liability. And as time progresses, the ability to pivot and venture into various domains decreases because of responsibilities.
something that you brought up with that was talking about how, like, your age is an asset and not a liability, and, like, and how so much of your content relies or targets, like, a younger audience with, like, a youth empowerment message. One of my thoughts that I had about that was, like, as you've moved away from home, like, more than, like, most students here, just, like, halfway across the world, can you tell me about, like, how your perspectives on this may have, like, shifted a little bit, had some, like, nuance added to them, or have, like, developed to become something even more beautiful and rich?
So there's a radical, a subtle shift in the content that I put online. One, my perspectives are much more profound. They have been redefined in some sense, but in centrality, they're much more profound, much more detailed. And with the global perspective that the University of Pennsylvania affords me, I'm able to interact with bright, like the best mind that the world has to offer, and engage in very exciting and intellectual discourse with them. And funny enough, most of the content that I post these days, some of it is actually it's not my ideas. It's just something that I have a conversation with someone. They talk about something quite exciting that sparks something within me, that piques my interest. Then I stretch that idea to its limits. I stretch it, I compress it, I make a video about it, right? And that level of packaging was not something that was able to do in Kenya. And the perspectives that I'm able to acquire here on campus by interacting with my peers who are brilliant, that one I must say for sure, has really informed what I put forth and how it resonates with my audience.
Tell me about how you plan to, like, take your social media presence to, like, the next level, like, as time progresses and, like, you gain more experiences here at Penn.
My social media is actually, I'll say, my data bank or my directory to some sense. Because it's not for now. It's for then. There's this innate and subtle belief that I have in myself that indeed I'm destined for greatness. And the greatness and global presence that I seek is there. 15, 20 years down the line, when I'm looking back in retrospect, I can say that, look, this is why I started and this is where I am now. And that level of foresight is what keeps me motivated, constantly putting in the hours, putting it out there, creating content that not only resonates with me now, but will have a significant impact in me in the future. But moving farther from me is the aspect of impact. There's always something very powerful when you see someone who's living your reality. When you see someone who's transcended boundaries and has gone above and beyond to redefine his reality or her reality, it inspires you, it sparks something within you. And that vicarious experience goes a long way in inspiring other people that you see, hi, Socrates was just here the other day. Look, he's there and he's doing phenomenal stuff. There's nothing special about him. There's nothing that he has that I don't have. So I too can do similarly as well in my own regard. And that level of that aha moment, that spark, that indeed your age is an asset, never a liability, and you can use it to your advantage, is exactly what I strive to solicit every single time I create content.
What have you found to be the biggest differences between living in Nairobi and living in Philly?
So I'm going to give this a more nuanced response, and I'm going to talk about education, because I am one who is very passionate about education. So when I was having conversations with my peers in the Husband program, and I got to learn about the phenomenal things that they had done prior to getting here, they had done impressive stuff. I have a friend of mine who's started a startup. Would you look at that? He has a startup. We are freshmen. We just got here. He has a startup. Another person just got here and has done X, Y, and Z, Z, and X. Done two internships already. He's like 16 years old. What do you mean you've done two internships? What do you mean by that? Before you know it, I'm saying this to allude to the fact that the power of opportunities and how it shifts and how it incites and ignites people towards self-expansion. So self-expansion, self-efficacy, two concepts that really speak to me. Nairobi, as powerful, as significant as it may be in the African context, still has its own various shortcuts and strengths. But I'll be more specific about education and how I can compare and contrast individuals and their propensity towards excellence. In comparison to now scholars and education within Nairobi and all that, as much as there are various challenges that are experienced within the context of Nairobi, I shall talk about the effect of what it does to the students. So, in Nairobi and in Kenya, to be much more specific, so there's what I call pseudo-meritocracy. And pseudo-meritocracy is, yes, we do say that it's a meritocratic society, but it's pseudo in the sense that talent is not rewarded. You have the best minds not being given the best opportunities. You have the best minds not being given access to opportunities or privileges where they can grow and expand and redefine the frontier of possibilities. And what that does is that talent goes where talent is rewarded. And that's why every single time I meet someone here on campus from Nairobi, I'm like, hey bro, how are you doing? I tell him, you're the best mind that Nairobi has to offer. You're the best mind that Kenya has to offer. Then he starts laughing and tells me, why? Because you're not in Kenya. Right? You're the best mind that Kenya has to offer because you're not in Kenya. Because talent goes where talent is rewarded. And that was a very poignant and, can I say, present reason as to why I decided not to study in Kenya, to be specific. Because I knew that the system would not foster my innate capacities in public speaking and my talent. And so that is a very severe disparity that exists within the educational systems that I see within the scholars of here in Philadelphia and the larger scheme.
Awesome. Okay, I think we can start wrapping up. So if you have any last comments that you want to leave us with, you can go ahead.
So for my final comments, mine is just about gratitude to thank the Daily Pennsylvanian and my phenomenal hosts here for inviting me and giving me the honor, the grace, and the chance to articulate my message and share my story, and to actually allow me to represent my people from the East African continent. I mean, it's vital, it's necessary that we have such kind of situations where people can make their voices heard and they can share their stories. And I personally, like I said, I believe in ideas, and above all, I believe in the power of stories to shift, to change lives. Because stories have this unique ability, way of connecting individuals that would have not otherwise connected, but are now unified thanks to a beautiful story that unites them all. So thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. I'm really grateful.
Yeah. Thank you. Wow. Okay. Thank you so much. I'll do a little outro. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Dior, for being a great co-host. And thank you, Socrates, for giving us some great insight and coming on today. And stay tuned for the next episode, guys.